I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. This podcast would not be what it is without the help of my co-host, Father Garrett Burns.
Hello, hello.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
It could just be you reading or something like that. If it was just you giving your thoughts, I don't know. People might like that. You have a cool voice.
I would really enjoy if I just got to read for an hour and like could count that as, yeah, I'm doing a podcast. I'm just opening up my book and reading.
Maybe we found some of your poetry from last podcast that you were writing as a 19-year-old in love on the Anderson lawn.
Oh, Lord
in Manhattan.
Have mercy. I can't imagine what sin I would commit that would require that punishment to come along is how painful that would be for me.
That would be awesome.
That'll be your purgatory.
We got some homework actually here.
Everything I wrote during my poetry and writing class, I think I have burned and destroyed. None of it exists anymore for my own sense of pride.
I had some old seminary notebooks that we had a fire a couple weeks ago, and I was burning the seminary notebooks in there. Uh-huh. And one of our focus people was like, wouldn't you want to go look through some of those?
Oh gosh, no.
I do not want to do that. There's some of that stuff that's good and that it can be a really healthy thing going back. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know what's in here.
Yeah.
We need to burn all of this.
Fire is the right place for it.
That's why I don't journal spiritually. A lot of people do, and that's a really helpful thing. And I've tried it a few times, and I look back on some of those old journals like, no eyes should ever see this.
That's so funny.
Well, today we are coming to you from the St. Padre Pio studio. Oh. As I said, there's always a reason for the saint, and there is a reason today.
How much time are you wasting on a weekly basis figuring out
wasting
how
these is a strong
saints
word.
Are going to get us naturally into our topic? Like you're going to have to answer to Bishop Kemi about how much time you're spending on this.
I'm embarrassed to admit the truth of that. I was definitely late today to an applicant's interview, largely because I was preparing notes for the podcast this afternoon. It wasn't the only reason, but so I definitely spent too much time working on notes and I was running late. I pulled in the chancery 5 minutes before the meeting. I'm like, but my notes are really good.
Yeah. All right. Well, why is it Padre Pio?
Funny you should ask. Yeah. There is a reason. So as we all know, Padre Pio was a man of many mystical experiences. Bilocation, levitation, reading souls, and a few podcasts back, Drew, you made the suggestion that one of our topics should be, if we had a saintly mystical power, what would we choose? And so that's our question to start the podcast today. What mystical power, not that it works like that in any fashion, but if God just said, hey, here's the menu, what do you choose and why?
I don't recall suggesting this, and so
no one is surprised.
Have conversations that are recorded because you forget dumb things that you say, but there's evidence.
This is why you burn your seminary notebooks so you can have complete ignorance.
Okay, there's a lot of them, and again, we're not asking for any of these because
you don't do.
These
that.
Are That's why we serious. Don't. Yeah, these are like serious things, and so I'd like to fly. Padre Pio was hanging up with the bombers during World War II and things like that.
Joseph Cupertino flew.
Yeah. The first thing that came to mind, though, if I could exist only on the Eucharist, I need to lose weight. Let's be honest. We don't need to.
No. You'll live forever.
Let's say second semester has not been awesome on. I do. And so if that could
I don't
help.
Even know what to think about the diet plan of Eucharist only.
We're not being disrespectful. We're not. I'm just saying if we could kill two birds with one stone here, that I think would be good. Again, all respect and deep respect and reverence.
St. Julian of Norwich is just livid
Catherine
right now.
Catherine of Siena is often annoyed with me, I think. But.
Well, that's what I was thinking. All of my motivations show why I am never going to get
Atheist. Amen. Amen.
I would love to read souls like Padre Pio just to have some like gotcha moments in the confessional. And, like, and I know there's something else. But that's why I don't have that gift.
I knew a priest who used to do that, but he couldn't read souls. He just assumed people were hiding, not to be recommended. He was an old timer, but he was like, are you sure that's all? I bet there's more. Oh, no.
One of my favorite things to do, I don't know why it reminds me, with the students is if they're in a group, and if there's groups that don't know each other that well, but I'm really close with some of the students, I'll yell out from across the hall and be like, John, did the athlete's foot get figured out? What ended up happening with the athlete's foot or something like that? And one of the times I'm going to catch, like, how does he know what's going on? Oh, no. Just to embarrass him in front of, in a public setting. But also, if you were like, I want the stigmata or something like that, you would be a psychopath.
Right. Yeah, right. You shouldn't.
I'd be worried about having reading souls. Mike, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have enough trouble what you're telling me in the confessional sometimes. I don't want to know any more details.
That's probably true. In all seriousness, that would involve like a deep, obviously it involves a deep prayer life. That's silly. But the penance that I think somebody who could read souls would often do, knowing the depths of the difficulty of this world and this life, would, I think, be unfathomably intense.
Yeah.
Same with like by location. Cause I was thinking that'd be sweet. I can be real productive and like Padre Pio would say, I can be praying and confessing and out doing a work of charity. Probably not the two or three things I'd be doing. I was just like, I could be watching and playing basketball at the same time.
Yeah, that's right.
I can watch me play basketball. Yeah.
And then I would have no outs. You know, it's like, I do have to go to the altar society meeting because I can be there and whatever else.
Dang it. Oh, my calendar's full. Yeah. But can't you bi-locate, Father? Yes, I can. I'll be there.
That's really funny.
The burden of bi-location.
What's yours, Chad?
I like living off the Eucharist. That's I hadn't thought about that one, but I think I would go, because I was afraid, like, what would be all these other things? I felt like I saw downsides to these mystical gifts.
Of course.
I'm going to go with John Bosco, prophetic dreams.
Ooh.
Like, I feel like, you know, he would have his dreams where he could see, you know, kids that were going towards hell or towards heaven or before that. And so he could, I'm like, that would actually be super helpful in the seminary. Like, if I had prophetic dream, like, hey, yo, Gary, we got to talk. I had a dream last night and you're not going to like what I have to tell you, but we got to do something about it. I was thinking about that question the day I saw Father Stu. And then that night I did have a dream about being in like Father Stu's position. There was some like, I'm grateful I don't have prophetic dreams. I also had a weird dream last night. So if I have prophetic dreams, the world's going to be a weird place in the future. I hate to tell you.
We might actually have a priest in the diocese that does have prophetic dreams.
Oh?
So we'll know by the time this comes out. But he had a dream about another brother priest being at a different parish in the time of possible moves right now. But he has not. He told a couple people where it was to test his gift. So who knows?
But hasn't told the guy.
He hasn't told the guy.
Does not know. And so we'll freak out if that actually occurs.
I also thought it would be handy. Like Padre Pio could send his guardian angel on errands. That would be like, I would send my guardian angel to the Ultra Society meeting. Like, hey, Mac, can you go check this out for me? And they can't complain about me not being there.
To get this.
That's basically how I treat my seminarian. That's how
Can you
just go do this for me? Yeah.
But they wouldn't like, well, Father wasn't here, but his guardian angel was. So cool. I guess that's better. Yeah. I'm sure he would have much better things to say on those matters than I would. Today's topic, we've done Father Garrett's vocation story. We've done Father Drew's vocation story. Today it's my turn to do my vocation story, which I've been telling it between being a high school chaplain and now in vocations for 5 years. I feel like I tell it a lot. So I get bored, I think, with my own vocation story. And I was thinking about that in the chapel just today. I think as a young priest, there's a little part of me that had to be okay with my own vocation story because it's not interesting. In a lot of ways, there's, and I don't know if other people have experiences, but there's like a little bit of an envy of people that, oh, they had a dramatic vocation story or the Lord stepped in and why do they want to hear my vocation story? Nothing big, and you try and spice it up, but at the end of the day, I don't think my vocation story is exceptional or that different. And part of my early priesthood is like, that's okay. It's my own love story. So what if didn't happen on the beaches of Hawaii? You know, that doesn't change the love that is there and the call of the Lord and how he's worked in my life. And so there was a part of in my early priesthood, I had to be okay with my own vocation story, as silly as that sounds. I grew up in a Catholic family, good Catholic family, went to public school for a few years because my parents couldn't afford all the kids. There were only three of us, but they couldn't afford all kids in Catholic schools. And it was pre-stewardship model. But eventually I went to Catholic schools. We were a faithful Catholic family growing up. You know, I talk about, I don't ever remember missing Sunday Mass. I mean, I didn't even know that was an option. We always went. And so I think one of the gifts that examples I learned that my father gave me, he was a duty-bound Catholic. I don't know that he always had a lot of love and relational aspect in his faith, but he knew what was right and wrong, and he knew he had an obligation to do right, and he was going to fulfill that obligation. And I think in our world right now, there's a lot of emphasis on relational aspect of God and church, and that is good, and that is better. But that doesn't mean the other thing's bad or wrong. It is a lesser thing, but you say all the time, Drew, you know, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And that was a valuable lesson I got from my father, of a sense of right and wrong, and I'm going to do this, even if I'm not maybe... My father was not taken of devotions of love, but we were always at Sunday Mass. We prayed in the morning when we were doing there. He was a faithful man. I'm grateful for that witness. My mom was on the other end in that she had the relational aspect. She sought prayer out. And I learned that from her. And I'm very grateful for that. I remember we were trained as kids. She had prayer time. We would come home from school and she would go into the room and shut the door. And she had a little angel she would hang on the doorknob. And if we saw the angel here, unless the house was on fire, we were not allowed to disturb my mom. And she'd take 30 minutes of prayer there. And then she'd come out and start dinner and do all of that. But we knew mom had prayer time. And so that was a very influential thing just growing up that, yeah, mom takes prayer seriously. And this is a good thing. So I had great benefits from both parents in learning faith. And I remember from like a little kid thinking about the idea of priesthood. We've talked before about, you know, as a child, the idea was there. I didn't tell anyone. It wasn't an idea that excited me. It was there in the back of my head. I didn't really like the idea. I was convinced I was a shy kid. I was convinced I'd embarrass myself and mess up liturgically, which I have done. I was not wrong in second grade, but I don't care as much as I did in second grade. So I pushed the idea out. Junior high, I remember the idea. It came back. And again, in high school, the idea of the priesthood came back. I also had a desire for the CFRs, the Franciscan. So that idea was kind of swirling around. And I remember telling my parents in high school, and they loved me very much. They were people of faith. They were good parents. They were not overly excited by the idea. In fact, my dad, I wouldn't go so far as to say it was discouraging, but as he kind of conveyed, he felt the priesthood was a hard life and he didn't want a hard life for me. So he was not completely supportive of it. My mother, she was more the school, well, go to college first, and this might just be a phase. Go to college, get your degree, and then we'll see if you still want to go. So I kind of went back and forth on it. I went on the Quo Vadis retreat, the retreat we do here in the diocese. And part of that Quo Vadis is you do a one-on-one walk with a priest. And the priest that I was walking with, I told him, I'm really thinking about seminary. I feel that's where I'm pulled. My parents aren't really in favor of it. And he said, well, then don't go. Go to college, which I'm not even sure was good advice. That was the advice he gave me. The Lord works through all sorts of things. And so I took that at 17 years old as gospel. Parents aren't a big fan of this. The priest told me not to do it. I guess I'm not going to go. So I didn't. I went to K-State. Now, I loved my time at K-State. I had great fun there. I liked my classes. I liked school. I had a good group of friends. I was praying regularly, going to Mass, playing a lot of Ultimate Frisbee. I was doing the typical guy post-Catholic high school thing. I grew my hair and facial hair out that looked really bad and really gross. But at the time, because I'd never been allowed to do it, I thought, this is great. And so, yeah, long hair, mutton chops. It was girl repellent.
We did the opposite. We buzzed Garrett's head at our graduation.
That was the
party.
Smarter choice.
He had like this floppy hair when we were in high school. Yeah. We buzzed it when we graduated. But I did try to grow a beard.
We tried to grow beards, yeah.
Very gross.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I look back at those pictures. I'm like, I thought that looked good. Mother Church has done a lot to clean me up, which today I am grateful for. In the moment, not always so. But I looked back, I'm like, oh, thank God Mother Church saved me from myself. Because one theme as I look over like my vocational life, anytime where decisions were left solely to myself, I make really bad life decisions. Like again and again, the best decisions that have been made in my life, the church has been involved of. And when it's just me, oh, that was regretful. So I go off to K-State and I liked it. I liked it a lot. The analogy I always use though is it was like having dessert every day. At some point, you want something substantial. I was having a lot of fun at K-State, but I knew there had to be more to life than fun. Every night when I would like lay down to go to sleep. There's that, you know, 15-minute window before you, when you lay down and fall asleep. And Hemingway had a phrase, and I like it and I use it. He calls it the death loneliness of a wasted day. And that's what I felt like when I would lay down. I'd have all of this fun, and then I'd go to bed, I'm not satisfied. This doesn't feel right. I'm not sure if this is where I'm supposed to be. Everything else was clicking. There's no reason I shouldn't have been fully satisfied, but I wasn't. So I realized I had to do something different. And so I start again reconsidering the idea, well, maybe I'm not going to finish my degree here. I didn't even know what I was going to get a degree, and I changed multiple times. I didn't have a plan. I go on Quo Vadis again a year later, and that priest, it was Bernie Georges, and I'm walking with him, and I'm telling him all this, and he just looks at me, well, why aren't you in seminary right now? Son of, because last year the other guy told me not to. I'm not listening to any of you anymore. But I started the application process. And as we talked about in the last podcast, I also simultaneously started pursuing a relationship with a girl. I'd been dating a girl the previous fall, and that it wasn't bad. It wasn't good relationship. It was what it was. It was based on physical attraction, and that's all the more it was. But this was based on so much more, because we met in that poetry class. Yeah, remember, yeah, that's right. We depths were of the heart. Soulmates. So I go back to K-State after Quo Vadis, and I'm pretty sure I'm going into seminary. So in my mind, also not a good idea. I made the dumb decisions, but the Lord worked through it. Why am I paying for all these gen eds? I'm going to go up to this school there, and they're going to provide gen ed. So I went back, dropped all of my classes, and then just signed up for classes I wanted to take that I knew I would not have a chance to do in seminary. So I had a poetry writing class. I had a fiction writing class. I had a Russian literature class. I had a great books of history class. And I think I had guitar lessons in there.
This is at Kansas State University.
This is at Kansas State. I was a model student. It was actually a pretty tedious semester. When you think of all the reading that was being done and writing, it was not smart on many levels. Yeah. Poetry
plus
class.
Plus the calluses on your fingers from the guitar.
Oh, that's right. That's
I love
right.
that you're writing poetry and you're playing guitar. Like, could you be any more of a 19-year-old
with shoulder length? I know.
With long hair trying to meet girls.
Every time I see a seminarian walk into the house with a guitar in hand, I'm like, no. That's not going to last. I've been down that road, my friend. Just save yourself the time.
Anyone want to play a little hacky sack too? What do we got going on?
I was walking barefoot to class. Jesus, you know, I did, man, all the embarrassing things. Gosh. So I end up applying for seminary. They accepted me. It was easier then.
We've heard.
It must have been.
Yeah. I am much more of a stickler than in that time. And I transfer into seminary, so I leave K-State where I had a lot of good friends, a lot of good things going. I go into seminary, and as you've talked before, Drew, in your experience, I didn't really like it. Seminary was hard for me, and I liked the classes I was taking at K-State, and so the classes at Conception actually were not as rigorous as some of the things I was taking at K-State. I enjoyed the atmosphere of the St. Isidore Center more than sometimes, you know, we're talking about Father Stu and some of those seminarians that can kind of get on your nerves. And there were a number of those guys around. I didn't really feel like I fit in, honestly, in seminary. Interestingly, it doesn't work this way anymore, but at the time I entered seminary, they didn't make me cut my hair. So in a school of 120 people, there was me and one other dude with, long hair and terrible facial hair, and everyone else was pretty clean cut actually at that point. So I just didn't fit in a lot of ways. And it would be hard for me even to say why I stayed in seminary. There's so many reasons. If you just look at it on the surface level, there's so many reasons I should have walked away or I would have walked away, and yet I didn't. Now, looking back on it now with the wisdom of some years and greater learning, one of the things I can definitely feel like I can say what was going on is in the classical spiritual journey, there's three stages, the purgative stage, the illuminative stage, and the unitive stage. And I was living the purgative stage. And what happens in the purgative stage is you let go a lot of the things that you're holding on to before God, whether that's vices or even sometimes they're good things in and of themselves, but you are holding on to them to such degree that they are keeping you from moving close to the Lord. And no one talks about the purgative stage as a pleasurable time. So, you know, you read the saints and things like, no one says, oh yeah, that was a great time when I had to give up my vices and when I'd give up even these good things like friends and virtuous people that I was hanging out with at K-State for this other thing. I couldn't articulate it then, but I can look back and I'm like, oh yeah, the Lord was sanding me down and that had to happen. And so in a weird way, I'm grateful for that. And I would do it again to get where I am today. But there's no part that wants to go back to that part of my life because it was a purgation. And every year I was in seminary, I thought I was going to leave and then something would happen. Again, I see it now as I believe the hand of the Lord pulling me back in. But every year something would happen that would kind of pull me back. I'm like, okay, one more year. After my first year of seminary, that was when my father was killed in a car accident and I was just kind of lost. That whole year of seminary, my junior year of college, in a lot of ways is a fog in my memory. There's not a lot that I can remember other than it being a very unpleasant time in my life. And a lot of things were not, I wasn't in a good place. I wasn't in a comforting place. And it was hard. And in fact, because I love K-State so much, and I think this was your similar experience, Drew, between KU and Conception, because I loved it so much, it made it that much more painful to live without it. Like if I would have gone out of high school into seminary, would I have still probably gone to that purgative stage? Sure. Who knows how it would work? I'm not going to say I should have done this, I should have done that. But at least humanly, there would have been some lesser pains because I wouldn't have been missing so much something that I had deeply loved. Go through that. I get to the end of college seminary and I am convinced I'm done. I've given it 3 years. I don't love where I'm at. I don't love what I'm doing. I push the church out of the way. I start making decisions on my own, which is always a sign of error in my life. So I had this brilliant plan. I had a job lined up to go and be a radio DJ at a Christian music station in Nome, Alaska. 22-year-old me thought this was a great idea. I'm going to step out of seminary, move to Nome, Alaska. I'll be still, you know, sharing the Lord's message and doing that. And Father Samuel Russell, who is Dean of Men at the time and a man who I have a deep respect for, who has been a prophet in my life on several occasions, this was one of those moments, and he saved me from myself, and he took me aside and said, that is stupid. He called a spade a spade. He just said, that is a bad idea. He said, you need to go to theology. The Lord is working in you. You need to go to theology. Give it at least 1 year. Give it at least 1 year and see what happens. And because I trusted him and because I did believe him, I did. In a lot of ways, I went to theology under obedience to Samuel Russell. And I am so grateful for that. I've gone back multiple times to tell him, to tell other people, because I love my priesthood. And at that point, I was going to walk away and his wisdom saw more clearly than mine. And he directed me off to theology. To this day, he's not able, because of his health, to listen to the podcast. But I am to this day grateful to Father Samuel Russell and what he's, if he never did anything else for me for that. So I went off to theology, found I enjoyed studying theology so much more than philosophy. There was a higher caliber of person. I'd also had some of my edges worn off, so I wasn't quite a sore thumb sticking out in there, so I could interact more in a community in a more positive way. And I really enjoyed theology up until the end, and I kind of got locked horns with the rector, which is never a good thing. And a large portion of that is my fault. I'm not going to say I'm the only one at fault, but a large portion of it was me. And so in the kind of strange thing, I ended up being student council president or whatever we called it there. I didn't want to do it. My spiritual director told me I had an obligation to do that. So I did that. And then locked horns with the rector, and that ended very poorly. And so we both agreed that I should no longer be student council president. So I think I have the record of the shortest term presidency at Mount St. I am the Richard Milhouse Nixon of seminary formation. I think from August to, we had elections beginning of January. We're just like, nope, we're done with this. This isn't good. And again, that kind of spiraled down, and we've talked before about moments of desolation, and that became a point of desolation. A lot of it was my own fault, my own sin, my own blindness, and that put me into a point of desolation, but the Lord was able to teach me and many valuable things through that. And finally, after that dark year, I was ordained a priest, and it was without hyperbole, the greatest gift I've ever been given in my life. I remember at my first Mass, I come from a family, we're not outwardly emotive necessarily. We're German stock. We don't do that. And I tell people that there have been two times in my adult life where I've cried in public. And one was my father's funeral and the other was my first Mass. And I remember just coming in and the music was overpowering. And I try and begin in the name of the Father and Son. And I just broke down crying from joy. And I was so embarrassed, but I couldn't help it. I couldn't stop the tears because just the joy. And Father Tetro was my priest MC, and he was very good. And he just kind of stepped in front of me, take a deep breath, hand me a Kleenex. It's all right. Don't worry about it. Start again. And we started again, and the Mass unfolded from there. Went in, I was a chaplain for 4 years and down at St. Mary's Colgan. Loved being a high school chaplain. That was actually secretly the one. That was the one thing I always hoped I'd have a chance to do as a priest. And I never told anyone, never told anyone. That was the thing I got to do out of the box. So I felt like, okay, Lord, you can ask anything after this, because this was the one thing I hoped I got to do. And I enjoyed it. And I think I was a pretty decent at it. And someone was telling me one time, I remember down there, you should do vocations work. You should do that. And I remember telling them, I could never work in the vocations office because I hated college seminary so much. I don't think I could ever honestly encourage a man to step out of college and into seminary. And I was convinced of this. And it was a true statement. At that stage in my life, I could not have done that. But as the Lord does, he worked in an amazing way. 4 years later, I became a pastor. And the diocese at that time sent us off to a week-long new pastor's training workshop that was held at another seminary. And I go to this seminary. I'm there with Father Patrick Riley and Father Mike Linneber. And one of the seminarians stops me and starts talking with me. And you guys know this guy, but he and I went to high school together, and he was actually older than high school to me, but he'd kind of taken a more circuitous lap, finished his college degree, had done some other things in life, and was just now entering seminary. And so he had done all of the things that I thought I wanted to do. And now he was in seminary and I was about to become a pastor. And in that, there was just a graced moment where I just realized, I am so grateful the Lord called me when he did, because the last 4 years of my life as a priest, I was saying at that time, have been the best years of my life. I thought I wanted to do what this guy was, but my life of the last 4 years has been better than anything he could have done. And at that moment, it was really a spectacular healing moment. All of the bitterness that I think I had been holding in my heart about leaving K-State and going to seminary, all of that was just washed away. And I was replaced by just a deep and a sincere gratitude. Lord, thank you for calling me when you did, because your plan was so much better. And I am so happy in the priesthood, and I'm so glad I'm here. And I am just flabbergasted that you would call me. Even though I was kicking and screaming, you drug me along where you knew I would be happiest. And I think if that moment had never happened, I don't think I could do vocations work. But because of that moment and the recognition of the goodness of the Lord, I have no qualms about saying, yeah. And you know, there's a guy in seminary right now. I've had this very conversation. I know you love K-State, but if this is where the Lord's calling you to be, it's going to be hard and it's going to pinch, but it's going to be worth it. Because the Lord has your good in mind. And if he's calling you now, you got to be ready to do that. And so that was a huge healing experience for me. Went on to be pastor. One other quick story. Another example of Father Samuel being a prophet in my life. As a pastor, I went back to Conception to do a retreat there 1 year. And him and I were just kind of out walking and talking. And he pulled me aside and he said, I'd only been a pastor about a year at that point. He said, I really think you'd be good working with seminarians. And I laughed at him. Sure, Father. No, you should do that. I'm like, well, that's really not my choice, Father Samuel. The bishop makes those calls. And he said, I'm a stubborn Lithuanian and we know what we think and we're usually right and we get our way. So I think you're going to work with seminarians someday. I'm like, all right, yeah, you've been right before, Father Samuel. I'm going to just trust you on that. Lo and behold, 2 years later, I move into seminary work. It was nowhere on my radar. I never expected that. But again, Father Samuel just coming out and being a prophet in my life. And so that's, I guess, in a nutshell, my vocation story.
Somebody came up to me after one of my masses the other day and said, I cannot believe Father Chad Arnold is a seminary authority figure.
A lot of people said that when I was named vocation director.
Someone who you were friends with back in the day, and they just loved that. They thought that was so rich.
The day I was ordained, the first thing Father Pat York said to me is, you know, a lot of people lost a lot of money today. Yeah. There were a lot of people betting against this moment. There is a rumor, and it's not true, But there is a rumor that I am responsible for the dress code at conception.
Because I've
heard that. And it, I don't know how it got. I followed the rules at conception, but I found loopholes for how I dressed there. And so I was unique in what I wore. But the dress code is not because of me. That is a false rumor.
What about the no rickshaw rule?
They love the rickshaw.
People demand a rickshaw.
Father Samuel was so happy when I brought that rickshaw up. It was the most positive thing that seminary talked about for a month.
And you were ordained 2011?
2010.
Because we were at his first mass, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think all the Totus Tuus people Totus that were teaching that, because I'd been involved in Totus Tuus, they came to
and
that.
And then we went to Doolin's the next year. Okay, so we did 2 years in a row going to Schulte for a first mass.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. At the time, Schulte was the powerhouse for vocations. There are more guys coming out of St. Peter's in the seminary than any other place.
What's our current powerhouse? St. Francis was it for a while.
St. Francis is probably there, although with the new classes coming, I'd have to look at the numbers. St. Pete's is making a run for it
back,
again.
Back, baby.
That's Western Sedgwick County farming country. There's power there.
Back.
So I do remember at my first mass, Totus Tuus people were there, and there was some priest from another diocese that was with them, and I thanked him for being here, but I also thought he was a priest from the Diocese of Wichita, so I definitely called out a priest that was not there and thanked him for being.
As a diocesan priest.
Yeah. Thank you, my brother, so-and-so. That was not so-and-so.
I still remember PJ Vogli at his first mass saying to all the priests who are there, now I've got to learn all of your first names.
That is definitely a PJ move.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're wrap it up there for today. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Drew is bringing us the final word today.
This is one from Pope St. John Paul II that I use a lot with my college kids. It is Jesus that you seek when you dream of happiness.
See you next week.